All right, guys, welcome to Always Hungry from iHeartRadio. My name is Bobby Flay, and I'm here with my daughter and co-host.
I'm Sophie Flay.
And on Always Hungry, Sophie and I gather around my stove to cook together.
Well, you cook, I ask the questions and eat the food.
If there's any food left, we come to the table together to share a meal, connect as a family, and tell the stories that matter to us. All right, so Sophie, we're talking about a very important ingredient, one of the most important ingredients worldwide, rice. You know, rice is one of those things, you know, don't take it for granted. It's so incredibly important. You know, over half the world considers it like their staple food. Some of you almost feel like every single culture has a rice culture when it comes to cuisine. And, you know, there's different sizes and shapes, and they're used for different things, and they are cooked in different ways, you know, whether they're long grain or medium grain or short grain rices. You know, the first kinds of rice that I think about are... Well, there's long grain rice, so you cook like a pilaf, so to speak. Basically, you know, rice, then you can add some onions or garlic or some aromatics to it or not, and then you add some sort of liquid. It could be some sort of broth, or it could just be water, some kind of stock, and then you bring it to a boil, you cover it, and you turn it down to a simmer, and you basically make fluffy rice. And then, you know, I think about, you know, the shorter grain rice. Is rice is plural, or is it rice plural?
Rice is plural.
Rice is plural.
Yeah.
Okay. So I won't be saying rice is any longer.
Okay.
Thank you for my grammar lesson, Sophie. Appreciate that.
What's the difference between brown rice and white rice?
Color.
That's it?
I mean, no. But I mean, you know, look, I mean, rice is basically it's a seed of like a species of grass. Did
okay.
you know that?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I guess people think of brown rice as just like a healthier version of white rice. I don't really know that to be true.
Yeah.
It just seems that way because it's got that nuttier flavor to it.
Mm.
But, so when I think of different rice, I mean, I think of brown rice too, but I eat less brown rice than I eat white rice. But, so then, you know, there's the long grain rice that we just talked about, which is like that sort of classic pilaf. You make that fluffy rice. You serve it with... every dish you can imagine. And, you know, one of the great things about rice in general is it can be flavored by so many, basically anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to that in a little bit later. But, you know, as I was saying, rice is probably, you know, one of the most important food crops, period, in the world globally. From a nutritional standpoint, mm-hmm. You know, from caloric intake, you know, a little bit goes a long way. It's something that... You know, a lot of it has a lot of sort of peasant origins because it can feed a lot of people for
right.
very little money.
Right.
And then you can be incredibly creative with it and, of course, make it taste however you want to make it taste. So, you know, then there's like things like arborial rice, which is, you know, a shorter grain rice that basically has a creamy texture. It's cooked differently traditionally than a rice pilaf. You're basically adding... hot liquid, again, it could be water or some broth or some stock, etc. You know, in any iteration, it could be vegetable broth or it could be shrimp stock, or it could be chicken stock, or, you know. And you're adding, as you're stirring the arboreal rice, you're adding the broth until it absorbs it. And basically what happens is it absorbs its volume by like three times.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets really plump. It basically just kind of drinks all that broth as you're adding it until it softens. And it takes a while. You know, it takes somewhere between, you know, 25 and 40 minutes depending on all your variables.
Jesus.
Yeah. So one of the things that I get made fun of a lot on Beat Bobby Flay is how often I make crispy rice.
Really?
Yeah, because it's like one of my go-to winning moves.
Yeah, because it's so good.
Well... that's why I make it. I mean, one of the things that people miss sometimes when they're doing Beat Bobby Flay is that you have to think about how the judges are going to taste it. You know, they're going to take a bite or two, and they're going to have a first impression immediately. So having contrast and texture in a dish is just as important as what it tastes like and what it looks like. You know, and a lot of people come there, and they have all these bells and whistles on the dish, but they don't mean anything. It's like... the judges would rather have like something crispy or crunchy than some white truffles.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, That's it's all about making decisions.
Yeah.
So, I mean, one of the things that people don't realize is, like, we have 150 people on that are on that show, between staff, audience, and contestants, and all that, and everybody's rooting against me.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
All the people that work for my production company.
Yeah.
Everybody. And so, like, you can hear, like, when I break out the cast iron pan to make crispy rice, like, there's a collective, like, ugh, in the control room.
Yeah.
Because they know that I'm going to, that doesn't guarantee a win.
But it's your secret weapon.
But it's one of my secret weapons. So we're going to, anyway, it's also one of my secret weapons at home because it's so good.
Yeah.
And so, like, when I make things like curries and things like that, I want to make rice with it. Sometimes I just, like, do, like, a fluffy rice. But some, like, having that, those little crispy bits along with the fluffiness of the rice is really
so good. Yeah.
So we're gonna make crispy coconut and scallion rice, but it also has cilantro in it, some lime zest, very fragrant, crispy, crunchy. And you start with rice that's already cooked. So this rice I made with coconut milk. Sometimes I just make it with unsweetened coconut milk. Sometimes I use coconut milk and water. Like, a lot of times on beet, that's what I'll do. So it's not too overly fatty, you know? And then what I do is I quickly, you know, because there's a 45 minute time limit on beet, I cook the rice and I spread it on a sheet pan, and then I put it in the freezer to stop it from cooking.
Oh.
And then I, you know, towards the end of, you know, before I'm going to plate, like maybe 10 minutes before the time is up, I get a cast iron pan on the stove, get it high heat, put some canola oil in there, and then I start crisping the rice.
Cool. Okay. Making rice is hard.
Yes, it is.
Because it's a balance.
It is a balance. And, you know, my rice doesn't always come out perfectly. I mean, again, like, when I'm cooking, like, classic long grain rice, you know, I basically, to me, you know, this is one of those things where it's like, there's little things that make a difference in your final product. So, like, my basic rice recipe would be, like, let's say it's a cup of rice. So I take a cup of uncooked rice, long grain rice, and I usually put some aromatics, because I put aromatics in everything. So, like, onions, garlic. Let's just say onions and garlic. Saute it, put the rice over it, let it get a little bit wet from the oil that you're cooking in the aromatics in. And then, so for each cup of rice, I put in between 1 3/4 and 1 7/8 of liquid. So again, it could be chicken stock, it could be shrimp stock, depending on what I'm cooking, or it could be water. So it's just less than 2 to 1.
What are you putting it in?
A pot.
Oh, in a pot, okay.
Yeah, like a sauce pot. So basically, a lot of recipes you'll see 2 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
I like a little bit less liquid because I don't want my rice to be overcooked.
Mm.
Then you bring it to a boil, and then you cover it, and you turn it down to a very low simmer. And somewhere around 15 minutes, take it off the heat, leave it covered for about 5 minutes, and then you take a fork and you fluff it.
Mm.
And what I do is I usually take it out of the pan and lay it on a sheet pan so it's one even layer, so that the bottom of the rice isn't cooking more than the top of the rice.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because it's still hot.
Yeah.
That's sort of a very basic rice recipe.
Well, then what do you do with the sheet pan? Do you put it in the refrigerator, or you just leave it out?
Depends. If I'm going to eat it sort of momentarily, I just leave it out. If I'm going to make crispy rice, or I'm going to eat it later, I cover it and put it in the refrigerator.
I tried to make rice in the oven once.
What do you mean?
I put it in the oven.
You can do that.
It didn't come out right.
Why'd you do that?
To throw it out. I don't know. I read it online.
A lot of people...
Well, now, and like, rice makers are so popular. So many people have those in their homes. But I, in a pinch, I go to Trader Joe's and I buy the frozen rice and I put it in my microwave for 3 minutes and it's perfect.
Oh, God, Sophie.
I told you, you are not going to like how I made rice.
I listen, one of the things that I love is that you're cooking more on your own because you're interested in doing it. This is kind of a newish thing.
Correct.
Because when you were a kid, you had no interest. Mm-hmm. You were just like, just feed me.
Mm-hmm.
So now that you're an adult on your own, living your own life, you're actually trying a lot of things at home. But, like,
you could easily just text me and ask me a question, and, and literally, will like it might not be a perfect answer for you, but it's going to take 80% of the aggravation out of your life.
I know.
So why don't you do that?
I know I should. But also, it's like, I don't know.
I don't think that I would tell you to go to Trader Joe's and buy frozen rice. That's probably not what I would tell
you
to do.
It's pretty good. You'd be surprised. You know what else I like in terms, like when talking about rice dishes? I love mango and sticky rice.
Delicious.
The best. I never had it until I actually went to Thailand, and it was, I ate it every day.
Yeah.
So good.
One of the things that we haven't talked about yet is I'm a rice pudding fan.
You are?
Oh my God.
I'm not.
It's probably because I know a lot of people don't like rice pudding.
Yeah.
I do like rice pudding, but there's...
That's a texture thing for me.
Okay. I mean, it's creamy.
Yeah, but I just don't like the little
rice. You don't like the rice running through the the creaminess?
Yeah.
Well, when I was a kid, when I was in grammar school... Your grandmother, my mom, Dame Dorothy, would pick me up from school, and we'd go to these Greek diners after school. And, you know, she would basically feed me lunch. And the Greek diners had the best rice pudding.
Huh.
And she used to try to get, like my mom was like this, you know, my mom was like a hot mom, you know. She was, like, very pretty and, you know, very fun. And all the guys in the diners were always in love with my mom. So she would try to coax the rice pudding recipe out of me. And she tried to make it a few times at home, and it was god-awful. And I'd be like, Mom, what happened? She's like, I don't think they're giving me the right recipe. They're keeping it from me. So I've kind of like secretly every once in a while gone on a quest to make really good rice pudding like the Greek diners made in New York City.
Yeah.
And it's so good, and it has cinnamon on it, which is one of the things that I love,
of course.
I don't like raisins in my rice pudding. But yeah. I'm a rice pudding fan for sure.
Okay.
But it has to be good. And then, you know, and then like when you think about like the most famous rice dishes in the world, obviously paella comes into mind. And, you know, paella is one of the, you know, it originated in Valencia in Spain. And do you know what the classic Valencian paella is?
No.
Probably the original one. It's actually rabbit and snails and sometimes chicken.
What?
Yes, that's the classic Valencian paella. But, you know, I would say the most popular one now is, you know, you would see is like obviously the rice, first of all, is cooked with saffron. And sometimes it's like chorizo running through the rice. And then there's like different kinds of shellfish. You know, it could be lobster or shrimp, you know, clams, mussels, you know, whatever you have available. And then chicken in there as well. And then a lot of times what they do is they make a lemon alioli or aioli. Alioli is the Spanish version, same thing. Basically, it's like a garlicky saffron mayonnaise, lemon. And then when they mix the paella up, they kind of lacquer it with this alioli at the end. And it just kind of, yeah, it's so good. It gives it a nice richness. Obviously, it gives it that burst of lemon flavor as well. But the key to it is what we were saying before is the bottom of the paella pan is the socarrat or the crust.
Mm.
And that's what gives it an amazing texture. And of course you can make, you know, paellas in all kinds of, you know, different flavors especially.
I love your paellas.
There's a few different rice that you can use for paella. Calaspara is one, bamba is one. They're very similar to arborio rice. They're kind of short and plump, and again, they really absorb a ton of liquid. So they, you know, they basically, if you start with a cup of calaspara or bamba rice, you're getting like 3 or 4 cups.
Mm.
I mean, it really expands and it basically just drinks up that liquid, and that's what makes it so flavorful.
I can taste the coconut in this rice.
Yeah. Don't forget the coconut, you know, has like some inherent sweetness in it, sugar in it. So you have to be careful not to burn it. So what I do is, so now the rice is in the canola oil. You can hear it crisping. And I take the back of a metal spatula, not a rubber one, a metal one.
and I push it down so it's even. And so that this, so that all the surface of the pan and the oil is hitting as much of the rice evenly as possible, and that's gonna create crustiness. And this is one of the things, like, you'll see like crusty or crispy rice dishes in lots of different cultures, like in paella, it's sokarat, which is the bottom of the crust. Mm. A lot of Persian rice dishes have that crustiness as well. Mm-hmm. It's really, you know, I didn't create this, but I just love it. And then I'm gonna slice up some scallions. So coconut scallions. You know, you could do things like, you could put like ginger in here as well, which would be nice. But usually, I mean, I'm serving this as a foil for something that's very high in flavor. So some kind of curry of some sort, mm-hmm. like a red curry or a green curry, or even like an Indian yellow curry or something like that. And then I take the zest of the limes and I put that in there as well. So you just kind of let it set. So you're basically frying the rice, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, and now I can really start to smell the coconut too. You know, because it's cooking, and like, as I said, you know, there's some inherent sugar in there. So from the coconut milk, I'm like, it's you know, it's going to help caramelize the rice a tiny bit.
So would you just serve this in the cast iron?
You could serve it in a cast iron. But usually I get it out of the cast iron so it stops it from cooking. Mm. I just put it in a decorative bowl.
Great. You got a lot of those.
Yeah.
And then of course, you like, you know, we were talking about like the fluffier rices, the more classic fluffy rices that we see. Great to serve with like stews and, you know, curries and kind of brothy dishes. Could be vegetables, could be meats, could be fish, doesn't matter.
I did a story about this small business that started during the pandemic called Golden Rice. Did you see me post about that?
Yeah, tell me about that.
It's a Persian dish, tashin.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I'm pronouncing that right. But it's this mother-daughter that started this pop-up, and it almost looks like a cake. Like the way that they present
the rice.
This cake, yeah.
Yes, or the rice.
With the way they present the rice, yes.
Because they're basically doing what we did, which is they crisp it up in a pan, but they don't break it up.
Right.
They keep it as a, like a, like a, exactly. So it has the shape of the pan,
yeah.
But it's crispy on all sides. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And you can, you like, you have to, people are obsessed with it now. You have to order ahead of time.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what dirty rice is?
I don't know.
It's chicken livers.
Okay.
You see that in Louisiana a lot. I love it. Hmm. It's like a dirty martini is made with, you know, vodka or gin with olive juice.
Yeah.
So it gives it that sort of like that dirty kind of look and feel and flavor. So chicken livers, which I have to say I'm a huge fan of chicken livers. Chicken livers and rice is so good. It's dirty rice. So good. You're not into that, are you?
No, that's not really my thing.
I like serving that with duck. I used to serve that at Bar American.
I love duck. Also, spicy tuna crispy rice is like...
Oh, yes.
I don't know, one of the most popular dishes ever.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's...
Oh, my God.
That's like...
I also, like, I am such a sucker for fried rice from, like, a Chinese restaurant. With a little shrimp... Oh my God.
Do you get
God.
10 ingredient fried rice? That's my go to.
What does that mean?
Just every ingredient. It's like shrimp,
just
chicken,
throw it all
pork,
in there.
Broccoli, you know, 10 ingredients. I'm like, oh, 10 ingredients? Like, I'm such a sucker for like marketing on menus. Like, if it says crispy, I'm ordering it.
Yeah, right. Okay? Right.
If it says 10 ingredient fried rice, like, do you want 10 ingredient fried rice or do you want just pork fried rice? Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like I'm getting a bargain.
Yeah.
I'm getting 9 free ingredients.
There's also at Night Market, they do like a crab fried rice, and that is so good. Oh my God.
At Night Market?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's near where, yeah.
Yeah, down the street.
I like that.
Yeah.
Haven't been there in a while.
Oh my God, let's go. Let's go after this.
Their food is really spicy. I like that.
Yeah.
So then, you know, while the rice is cooking, I sprinkle some of the scallions on top, some of the lime zest.
Wow. Very powerful. The smell is very powerful.
Yeah, it's very favorite. Salt and pepper.
Yeah.
It's
smells good, right?
Yeah, it smells great.
So then you kind of like take a peek at what's happening with the rice. I don't think it's quite ready yet, no. Mm-hmm. But you know, cast iron is great. And a nonstick pan works as well. But cast iron, you know, obviously holds the heat really nicely. You can see you can start to see the edges are getting that sort of
golden
crispiness.
Yeah.
This stuff is like so good. I love this, like with a shrimp curry or a fish curry or a chicken curry. Even like a duck curry is good. Or a vegetable curry.
A duck curry. I've never had a duck curry.
Tofu curry. Looks good. It doesn't have to be like dark. It just has to be crispy. Because that's the key. See that?
Yeah.
Right there? And also, see, that's perfect. Like, you don't want all of it to be crispy. You want a combination of fluffy and crispy. And it goes really fast. And then while you're doing that, we're going to kind of flip it over and then do the other side. Just a little bit. And then the scallions and the lime get distributed into the coconut rice. You can also use coconut flakes on this too if you wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you love coconut.
Yeah. Do you like coconut?
Yeah.
You used to not like it.
Yeah, no, I like it now.
What happened?
I don't know.
You went to coconut school? All right. That's good. Now I want to make curry.
I know, right?
That's one of the things about having like cans of Thai red curry and green curry in my cupboard all the time and some coconut milk.
Yeah.
You can make anything taste so good. You know, you have some proteins or even some vegetables.
Right.
And you combine the coconut milk and you toast the curry paste in a pan a little bit, add the coconut milk, some lime, some fresh herbs. It's just such a deliciousness. And if you serve it with this crispy coconut scallion rice.
Mmm.
I often find like a lot of people, especially in the United States, I think that there's a tendency to make risotto too thick and it should really be brothy.
Do you make risotto often?
Often would be a stretch. Mm. I'd probably make it more than most people make it because I love cooking Italian food, but I cook pasta more than I cook risotto.
Yeah.
But whenever I cook risotto, I'm really happy I did it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I forget to make it.
I know. It's so good.
I think of risotto as like a really good platform for shellfish.
Mm.
Like it's really good for shrimp with scallops, with lobster, with clams, with oysters. So good.
So good.
I mean, but the key to those things is using the broths that you're cooking with. So if you just just cook risotto, and let's just say it's like, you know, you're using water, it's going to be bland.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you put shrimp in at the end, like the shrimp will taste like shrimp, but the rice won't taste like shrimp.
So you want to use the shrimp stock.
Exactly. And I always tell people, when you go to your fishmonger, I know it's a pain, but it's worth it. Buy the shrimp with the shells on it. Take the shells off, devein the shrimp, then you have a clean shrimp. Doesn't take that long. Then you make, and like literally as I'm cleaning them, I'm making shrimp stock. So I take the shells, I take some water, I take maybe an onion, maybe a little white wine, a touch of like tomato paste, and then, you know, 35, 40 minutes later, you simmer it, you have beautiful shrimp stock and it brings so much flavor. And they gave you the shrimp shells for free. Use them.
Right.
So in terms of like risottos.
Isn't risotto hard?
Well, I was just going to say, people are intimidated by risotto.
Yeah.
So obviously, it makes sense if you're saying that to me, because the bottom line is, with risotto, for the most part, you can't leave the stove. I mean, you can for a second, but like the bottom line is that once you start cooking the risotto, you need to stay there and stir and add broth and stir and stir and stir until it's cooked.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, basically what you do is, you can start with some aromatics. You toast the rice in the pan with a little olive oil without creating color. Just kind of get the rice going. And then you start adding stock in the broth. It absorbs it. It gets thick. You add more. Mm. It absorbs it. It gets thick. You add more. So you're constantly stirring.
So you really have to watch it.
And you're beating up the starch so that the starch comes out and it basically starts creating this creaminess. Without adding cream, obviously, to it. But like, you know, I love making like mushroom risottos.
Yeah,
or
it's like one of my favorite dishes of all time.
A tomato saffron risotto, delicious. I love making green risotto too. So you just have
what's in that?
It's basically what you can do is, it's almost like pesto-ish.
Oh.
So like Yum. You have a pesto that you can add at the very end. So it has Parmesan cheese in it, could have some nuts in it, could have olive oil, garlic, lots of fresh herbs. Or you can just do like lots of fresh herbs at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I love making green pea risotto.
Not into it.
Why?
I don't know.
Oh, Christina loves green peas. So anything green. I made a green pea soup the other day. She said it was the best thing she ever ate.
Wow.
It wasn't. But.
Nice.
I mean, as long as she thinks so.
Sure. Who cares? With it. Yeah. Don't ask questions.
Exactly. I mean, think about it this way, Sophie. So like, if you're cooking like a leg of lamb or something, or some kind of roast, you know, like when you serve red meat and you drink red wine, think about like having a red wine risotto go with those roasts. That's
okay.
You see what
I'm
saying?
As like a side dish, not as a main course.
Exactly, it's part of it. So like osso buco, which is the classic Milanese Italian dish, which is veal shank that's braised. It's usually served classically with risotto Milanese, which is saffron risotto.
So you
have the saffron risotto underneath the veal shank, and then there's gremolata on top, which is like herbs and garlic, et cetera, olive oil.
Yum.
Orange zest, lemon zest, that kind of stuff. But that's a good dish too. That's a nice hearty dish. So risotto can be an appetizer. It can be a main course on its own, just like shellfish or lobster risotto, which would be great. Or it can be part of a bigger story. You know what I'm saying? Where it plays a sort of supporting role.
I think you should make me some risotto.
How about white truffle risotto?
Okay.
You like that situation?
Yeah, let's
order How about a cacio pepe risotto?
Oh, I mean, that sounds sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of pecorino cheese, black pepper. Delicious.
I'm down.
You down with that?
Yep.
All right, you got it.
Always Hungry is created by Bobby Flay and Sophie Flay.
Our executive producer is Christopher Hasiotis.
Always Hungry is produced, edited, and mixed by Jonathan Haas-Dressler.
Always Hungry is engineered by Sophie Flay. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.